Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. We're going to be talking primarily today, folks, about the Royal Rumble and if Vince McMahon's return may actually affect who wins the Royal Rumble. We're also going to be giving you a rundown of this week's SmackDown and our thoughts on that. Before we start with any of that, though, I saw something this week that disturbed me a little bit, and I want to talk about it because I think it's important. I think it's important to the overall health of the wrestling universe and the overall health of the business itself. I heard an interview recently with Jackson Ryker. And if you remember him, he was briefly in as the fan that Elias took under his wing. And of course, he was in the Forgotten Sons and that kind of stuff. And he was let go from the WWE. And he said in a recent interview that because of his tweet, he received so many death threats, he had to shut his phone off. And that some of the text he received from WWE workers, people he worked with, were also very unfavorable. And while they didn't rise to the level of fans telling him they were going to kill him, they were tweets expressing that we're very disappointed. We're very disappointed in you. We expected better of you. And it angered me, and I'll tell you why it angers me. It angers me because that's what a cult does. When you deviate from a cult, they don't come after you necessarily to kill you. They were very disappointed. We thought you were one of us. We really thought we could rely on you to be much smarter and make the right choices. That is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, insidious behavior. I could do that right now. There's many, many people who I do not support in the political realm, and there's many people I don't care for in the wrestling world. And I'll tell you point blank out the people I don't care for, but it does not affect my judgment when it comes to if they had a good match, if they're having a good performance, if I enjoy watching them. It only seems to be one side of the political equation that wants to filter out people who disagree with them, and that's insidious. And that's poison. And that's not good for anyone. And now you have a wrestler who basically doesn't have a job, and the good majority of it is that he said the most horrible thing you could possibly imagine anyone saying. I support the president. I wonder if tomorrow, if any wrestler came out and said, you know, I support the current president, if it would lead to him being fired, if it would lead to him having a million death threats, if it would lead to a locker room tweeting him how disappointed they were, I will guarantee you the answer is no. So it's time people understood something very clearly. You can have an honest difference of opinion. And if you cannot deal with the fact that other people see things differently than you do, then it's you who possibly need a psychiatrist. It's you who are intolerant. It's you who are the fascists. It's you who are the dictators, because you will not allow someone to have their own opinion. Now, I've heard people say, I don't know how, your president, he was a racist. Well, I don't see him as a racist. Maybe you do, so that's why you don't support him. I never saw that. I never one time saw that. I would not support a racist. I don't see it. Truthfully, I don't think you do either. I just think that you have been told to see it, so you see it. You've been told that's what it is, and you say, oh, well, then it must be. I don't play those games. I've always been very honest with you. I don't care who you voted for. If you listen to this show and you hate right-wing politicians and you love left-wing politicians, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad that you are active, and I'm glad that you're engaged, and I'm glad that you have a voice in this political conversation. I don't agree with you, and that's okay. And that doesn't make me anything more than it makes you. Jackson Ryker is basically unemployed because of what he believes, and that's no different than being unemployed because of your skin color, your sexuality, or anything else. And if you think it is, you're sadly mistaken. And I think it's time that people understood this. And I think it's time that people who have nothing better to do than to voice death threats at people they don't even know, I think they need to be held accountable. I really do. I think if you're the type of person who is going to throw death threats at somebody because they disagree with you politically, you need to actually seek help. You bear watching. You bear watching. There are people in politics that I think are positively evil. People threaten them with death. I would never threaten them with bodily harm. I would hope they get voted out. I would do my best to scream and holler and say this is why I think they need to be voted out. But if you literally take to someone's social media, tell them they need to die, I think you need to take a really good, long, hard look at your life. And I think you really need to take a good, long, hard look at your mental health and to figure out why it is that you can't accept the fact that some people disagree with you and you have to be right. See, this is not the way the world works, folks. When I wrestled with people I truly and honestly loved like a brother. And I wrestled with some people that I wouldn't give the time of day. Outside the ring. It never mattered. It never mattered. I never one time asked them who they voted for. I never one time asked them their sexuality. I never one time bothered with their personal life. It was a job. I liked some people. I disliked other people. It didn't matter. What mattered was we worked well together, we put on a good show, and we entertained people. That's what we're there for. I'm not there to date the person. I'm not there to be their best friend. I'm not there to form some sort of a bond, a lifetime bond with anybody. And I'm not there to second guess what they believe. And I truly and honestly think that if I owned a wrestling federation and I found out that some of my wrestlers were tweeting their disappointment at other people's political opinion, I would fine them or suspend them and tell them it's irrelevant. You don't make a hostile work environment because you don't agree with someone. How about if I don't agree with Nyla Rose being in the women's division? Should I make a hostile work environment? Should I say, I'm very disappointed that they're letting a man wrestle underneath them, pretending there to be a woman. I'm very disappointed. I'm very, very disappointed in this federation. And anyone who's playing that game, I'm very disappointed in. Or should I just say, well, you know, it is what it is. And whether I agree with it or I disagree with it is irrelevant. Move on. Right? But I want to point one more thing out before we stop this semi. It's not. I don't consider this a political rant. I consider this a social rant. I want to point one thing out. For every single wrestler who wrote Jackson Ryker crying about how disappointed they were because he supported the president, you were cashing a paycheck from a man whose wife worked for that administration and was a huge supporter of that president. If you really felt that offended, if you were really that hurt, you'd quit. Okay? If you really thought the president was Hitler, I wouldn't work for Hitler. Would you work for Hitler? Or would you say, I'll just take my talents and go somewhere else? I'm not having that guy sign my paycheck. So you're hypocrites. Every single one of you are hypocrites. You wouldn't go to Vince McMahon's office and say, I'm very disappointed that your wife is working for an administration I disagree with. No, you wouldn't do that. You'd piss your pants before you'd do that. So you're the hypocrites. You're the ones who should be disappointed in yourselves. Because if tomorrow I walked into a locker room and I found someone who supported something I absolutely do not support, I could still laugh, shake their hand, and say, let's go have a good match, dude. We'll get some pizza afterwards. Who cares what I believe? Who cares what you believe? That's not what we're here for. We're now living in a society where we cannot do that. And we're now living in a society where people get together and say, we must force that person out. We don't want that person here. And that's dangerous. That is a form, that's prejudice at its highest degree. And whether it's we don't want that person here because of their skin color or sexuality or their ideology, it doesn't make any difference. Treating someone differently because of their color of their skin, their nationality, their sexuality, or their ideology is still prejudice. And if you practice that, you are doing exactly what you claim to be fighting against. So I wanted to get that out of the way, Mike, because I thought that was just a horrible interview. Ryker basically doing nothing, and for what? For tweeting that he supported the President of the United States.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, I guess they can feel like they're getting away with something because think about this. What have one side of the aisle been doing to the other side of the aisle for a long time? This isn't a political show, but think about it. Calling people terrorists who aren't terrorists, racist, bigots, sexist, homophobes, you know, just slandering a bunch of people that shouldn't be slandered, right? That's what's been happening. And this is exactly what this is. You know, this is a guy who has all the right in the world. Now, maybe he shouldn't have done it under his Jackson Ryker name, right? You know, maybe right. He should have had, I don't know what his real name is, but, you know, maybe he should have had another account where he did it under his real name, right? But we can argue. We can argue about that another time. This has nothing to do with that. This has everything to do with all these other people that basically took this guy's career away from him.
Yeah, and what we have to remember here is, again, it's bad enough that the people you work with are trying to strong-arm you and embarrass you and force you to groupthink by saying, oh, we're so disappointed in you. We really felt that you would be better than this. Better than what? You see, some people look at the world a little bit differently than other people. And I got news for you. Feels exactly the same way that that Ryker felt. So you're disappointed in half the country, are you? I mean, folks, knock it off already, folks. It's no different than sitting down at the table with someone who says, oh, boy, I'm putting extra mayo on my sandwich, and me saying, well, mayo is disgusting. I find mayo disgusting. If my friend likes extra mayo in his sandwich, good God bless him. If the person I'm sitting next to likes rap music and I like heavy metal, well, God bless him. If the person I'm sitting next to thinks that my favorite actor is terrible and I think their favorite actor is terrible, God bless them. I don't care. I don't have to be constantly stroked into thinking the way I think is right and the way you think is wrong. I am mature enough to understand that you may not look at things the same way I do. All I ask for people is that you judge things by the facts, not by what other people think. If you give me the facts of why you don't like something or you do like something, I'm perfectly okay with it. If you just give me a bunch of bullshit and lies, then you're giving me bullshit and lies. You're making it up. And that's what we have here. We have here a society that was drilled for so long that anybody who might support the former president is evil, that everybody believes it. Well, it's just not true at all. That's just absolute dumb rhetoric. I could say, well, anybody like CM Punk knows nothing about wrestling, absolutely nothing. And 90% of them are mama's boys and live in a basement. I don't know that to be a fact. I just made that up. But if I say it loud enough and often enough and people believe it, all of a sudden it's, oh, it's not cool to like CM Punk. We better not like him or we'll be out of the group. That's not the way to think, folks. It's not the way to think. I happen to think CM Punk's the most overrated wrestler maybe I've ever seen. If he's your favorite wrestler, God bless you. I'm glad you enjoy him. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about it. You like what you like. We can debate why I think he's overrated, and we can debate why you think he's the greatest. It doesn't change my opinion of you, because I don't judge you by who you like. And I certainly don't levy death threats. And for any person to have to go through that is outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. And if that's the kind of people who attend wrestling events, there's people who levy death threats over a cell phone because they're so cowardly and insecure about their own opinions, then you should be deeply and completely ashamed of yourself. That's all I got to say about that. Anyway, folks, is Vince McMahon's return going to change the possible outcome of the Royal Rumble? Well, let's start by saying this. It does appear as though The Rock is not going to be at WrestleMania, and now there are rumors, well, stronger than rumors, there are people flat out saying we knew for months he wasn't going to. This didn't happen yesterday. I mean, the news might have broke yesterday, but the WWE themselves knew The Rock was out months ago. Now, I don't know. You can still be skeptical, and you may be right. It's possible this is all just one big swerve, because everybody's like, well, The Rock's obviously going to be there. So maybe they're going to swerve people. But it's starting to sound legit. Is that they knew a long time ago that he wasn't going to be there. Then we have to take a look and say, well, if you knew that months ago, who were you setting up to be Roman Reigns' opponent? And it would appear as though the answer is they were counting on Cody coming back, but if for any reason Cody couldn't get back, then I guess Seth Rollins was the next guy up. Now they got them both. So now that you got them both, it'll be interesting to see which avenue they decide to go with if, in fact, this Rock thing is not a swerve. Now, the interesting thing is they say they've known this for a long time, but it was announced that on Monday Night Raw this week, they were going to have an acknowledgement ceremony for the Bloodline, and that has now been canceled. And if there was ever a time when The Rock was going to interrupt something, I would imagine it would have been at the 30th anniversary when they were having an acknowledgement ceremony for the Bloodline. That sounds exactly like the right place for The Rock to have crashed the party. And with the announcement that I'm definitely not going to be there and I'm not going to be involved in WrestleMania, it's very odd that the WWE would be canceling that. Now, they say it had nothing to do with it, nothing to do with The Rock's announcement at all. But I don't know, Todd. That's very unusual timing to me.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I everybody's saying it, the thing is canceled. Personally, I don't think it's canceled. They're just trying to fool us 90% of the time of this thing with the acknowledgement thing with the Roman Reigns. I think I still see this coming with The Rock.
See, I don't know if they're going to do the ceremony or not, but that doesn't even mean that The Rock's not going to be there at some point. But I think they're trying to get out ahead of this. See, here's the situation. If everybody tuned in to the 30th anniversary saying this is when The Rock's coming back and he doesn't, everybody leaves disappointed and says, oh, man, I thought The Rock was coming back. That sucks. And they wouldn't like the show. So maybe this is the WWE Mike trying to get ahead of things by saying don't expect him because he's not going to be there. So you're not disappointed.
Yeah, and this too could be a swerve because, yeah, he might not be able to work his schedule to get to WrestleMania, but he could work his schedule to get to the 30th anniversary of Raw, since he was a big part of Raw. I mean, yeah, he's a big part of WrestleMania, but he's an even bigger part of Raw. So yeah, and one other thing about the Jackson Ryker deal. Think about this, you know, I live near Baton Rouge. The biggest arena in Baton Rouge is a 25,000-seat arena that on the floor, you can put another 5,000 seats, so that's 30,000 seats, all right, in that arena. So, you know, and you take that and you half that, and you basically have 15,000 people that might very well be for Donald Trump. Think about that. You know, and do you want to insult 15,000 people who's actually paying your salary?
See, I've always said this. If you ask me my political opinion, and I think it's any of anybody's business, I'll tell you I'm not ashamed of it, and no one should be ashamed of theirs, regardless of what you believe. But to be brutally honest with you, I don't expect you to judge me by it any more than I expect you to judge me by what I like to wear or what I like to eat or what music I listen to or anything else. What the hell does that matter? You know, I once said to somebody, I'm the type of guy that if I'm driving on the road and I see somebody broke down or somebody's in trouble, I stop and I try to help them push the car out of the road or whatever. I've done it many times. Somebody stalled in the road, they can't push the car out by themselves. So I get out and I'll push the car to the side of the road, see if they need a ride or something. I don't ask them who they voted for. I don't care who you voted for. And I think that we need to get back to that. And we shouldn't be ashamed. See, what is attempting to be done here is that they want people to have to be ashamed or hide their views. You're in lockstep with a certain view. And that's insidious. And that's censorship. That's forced censorship. I dare not say who I support. Because if I say who I support, I'll be ostracized and people won't like me. Well, the truth is, you know, I'm an entertainer. I don't put any of my political beliefs on my in my music, and I don't put any of my political beliefs on my musical pages or anything else. I make music for everybody. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what your sexuality, your nationality. I don't care any of that. When you listen to me, you just listen to me because you want to listen to music. You don't want to hear me bloviate about who I voted for. But if you're going to ask me, I'm not going to lie. And if you're going to judge me by it, that's your problem, not mine. Now, I don't take to my band sites and say, oh, here's what I believe, and if you don't, you're an idiot. I don't do that. Why would I do that? I don't believe that. So I would never do that. And I try to keep it out of my profession. But I'm not going to hide it and pretend I'm ashamed of it because I'm not. I'm not. Anyway, Derek is saying, you know, I don't think it matters who's in control. It would probably look, you know, it's pretty obvious it's going to be Cody. And on the surface, that could be true. But let me explain why I think maybe that's not 100% accurate. Two reasons. One is we all know this. The Rock and Triple H are not close. Yes, they have said, oh, that's all behind us. Everything's good. No, it's not. No, it's not. There's hard feelings between them, and there always has been. And for The Rock to come back and work for Triple H when Triple H was in charge was probably pretty damn slim chance. And that's why I always said when Triple H took control, I'm not sure about this Rock thing. Man, on the other hand, is a different deal. Look how many times Brock Lesnar said, I'm only going to work for Vince McMahon. If Vince leaves, I'm going to leave. Look how many times The Undertaker has said, if Vince McMahon needs me, if I'm 70, it's going to be really hard for me to say no. Shawn Michaels said the same thing. If Vince McMahon truly and honestly needs me for something, it's going to be pretty hard to say no. There are people who feel they owe their entire careers to Vince McMahon, and they probably do. And there are people who feel that they're obligated if he really is in a spot and he needs them, because one of them. The Rock would very easily say to Triple H, can't do it, too many movie commitments, sorry, then see you later. Not so easy to say to Vince McMahon. Not so easy at all. Because The Rock clearly knows that Vince McMahon is the reason he has those. So if Vince McMahon himself said, isn't there any way we can do something, I'm going to tell you that I'm not 100% sure that The Rock wouldn't try to bend over backwards to make that happen, with some concessions maybe of saying, well, I can't do this and I can't do that and I won't take this and I won't take that, but very possibly could do it. On the other hand, Cody Rhodes was Vince McMahon's golden boy when he came over. Vince McMahon wanted very much to promote him. It was going out of his way to promote him. If you remember, Vince McMahon had clock set. We got 10 minutes to Cody. Triple H does not like Cody Rhodes. Didn't even less after Cody Rhodes did the mocking, breaking the throne with a sledgehammer type thing on AEW and poking fun of him. Triple H has no obligation to promote Cody Rhodes, especially in the main event of WrestleMania. And we know how Triple H sometimes guards those things when he's in charge. So if Triple H truly is in charge, you would be much more likely to see Seth Rollins. But if Vince McMahon actually still has some sway, and obviously he does, if Vince McMahon were to say, well, I'm taking a little bit of charge of WrestleMania, then I would say it's very much leaning toward Cody. So this is why I say Vince McMahon could change the outcome of this. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm almost willing to bet that if Vince McMahon picked up that telephone and said to Dwayne Johnson, we 100% need you. We'll make whatever concessions we need to make. We'll make sure you don't take these certain moves. It can be a six-minute match. It can be whatever it has to be. You're working with someone you know is going to protect you. We're going to make sure if you have to win the Royal Rumble, you'll be the 30th guy in there, and there'll only be three guys left or whatever it happens to be, so there's no chance of you getting hurt. Whatever concessions we have to make, we'll make, but we need you. I don't think Dwayne Johnson says no. I honestly don't think he says no. Because I don't think he feels he can say no. He can say no to Triple H. That's where the difference is. Now, conversely, if you let Triple H be in charge, he could say, oh, well, you know, Cody, he's been gone too long. He's lost a lot of his momentum. We don't have enough time to give him his momentum back before WrestleMania. We'll do something with him after WrestleMania, but, I mean, he's coming back at the Royal Rumble. It's not enough time to really build him up. Let's wait, because he doesn't like Cody. Vince McMahon, on the other hand, would be, well, that's who we initially started with, and this is who we're going to go with, and that's it, because he likes Cody. So there we have the difference. So, Mike, I mean, Vince McMahon could very well make a difference in who wins this Royal Rumble.
Yeah, and here's another thing to think about. You're talking about The Rock and all these guys that feel like they can't, they won't be able to say no to Vince McMahon. Another one is Ric Flair. Remember what Ric Flair said? I will work for Vince McMahon. If he calls me, I will work for him. You know, so again, and maybe I'm just spitballing here with this whole Cody thing. Maybe Vince knows that there's bad feelings between Cody and Triple H, and he has to come back for Cody to complete this storyline. Because if he doesn't, then the storyline is going to go off into the ether, and you know, and Cody will be a mid-card. You know,
that's very, very possible. Here's what. Listen, I'm not trying to down Triple H because I really like Triple H, but he has been petty in the past. Triple H has been petty in the past. You can ask people, and if he doesn't like you, or you've wronged him, he thinks you've wronged him or did something to make him look bad, he can be pretty tough. He thinks Cody Rhodes made him look bad. He thinks Cody Rhodes literally made fun of him and made him a laughingstock on AEW. So what exact obligation does that give him, or incentive does that give him, I should say, to anoint Cody the main event of WrestleMania? Not much. Not much at all. On the other hand, Seth Rollins is his boy. Now let's take a look at the other hand. What incentive does The Rock have to bend over backwards for a guy he doesn't like in Triple H? None. Very easy for The Rock to say, sorry, busy, you know how I am. Can't take the chance. Too much going on. Won't be able to get in the ring shape. I'll leave the door open, but, you know, not right now. If Vince McMahon makes that phone call, I don't know. You tell me. Because I know that if I were in The Rock's shoes, that would be a hard phone call to say no to. A very, very hard phone call to say no to. When someone who literally gave you your start and you are now in the position that you are in calls you and says, really, truly, and honestly need you for this, very difficult to say no. So this is the situation we're in now, Todd, where now that Vince McMahon is back and supposedly has nothing to do with creative, it doesn't mean that behind the scenes he isn't trying to negotiate some things. And if he is, I just think if Vince McMahon is in control, it's much more likely that either this is a swerve and The Rock will be there, or that Cody wins the Royal Rumble and gets a shot. But if Triple H is truly in charge, I think it's much more likely that The Rock will not be there and Cody will not get this title shot, and that it probably will be Seth Rollins.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, about Vince McMahon, when he was not there, he was still running operations at his home of the WWE. He was still owns the company, still doing stuff behind the scenes at his house with the WWE.
Yeah, he was, but he wasn't doing the creative. What I'm saying now is Vince McMahon is still saying it's up to Triple H. I don't do anything with creative. I'm just here to facilitate a deal, possibly a sale, or make a better TV deal, or whatever we have to do. That's my only worries in the business right now. So that don't necessarily have to be true. And I know Mick Foley has recently said, listen, and I agree with about nothing Mick Foley has to say, by the way, even though he's one of my favorite, all-time favorite wrestlers, I agree with just about nothing Mick Foley said. But I agree with this one. He said, you have to understand Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon doesn't have any hobbies. Vince McMahon isn't a golfer. Vince McMahon doesn't collect stamps. Vince McMahon doesn't have this or that. Vince McMahon's hobby is work and the WWE. That's what he loves. That's what he's done forever. That's all he knows. And for him to walk away from it for any length of time, we all knew it's just a matter of time, because he's not going to be able to just settle in, sit on his porch and, you know, have a drink and look out at the sunset. He's going to want to get back in. And when he gets back in, folks, even if it's from the business end, he's eventually going to want to have a little say. And this could be the time. The biggest time is WrestleMania. You notice he came back just before the event leading up to WrestleMania, right? This is when he picked his time, not after WrestleMania, just starting the buildup of it. Could that be a coincidence? I guess so, because the contracts were running out and things. He wanted to come, but, man, that's a perfect timing. And can Vince McMahon totally set out a WrestleMania? Can Vince McMahon totally say, I have no say over anything in WrestleMania? The thing that I created, the thing that I most am most proud of and I most love, WrestleMania, I'm going to have no say in it whatsoever. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. So I think he will have some say in it. And it will be very interesting to see if his say affects in any way, shape, or form who wins. Now, if The Rock is truly out and The Rock has told all parties involved, I legitimately cannot do this, then it's got to be down to Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes. Who else is there? Don't tell me Sami Zayn. People tell me Sami Zayn. That's not going to ever happen. Sami Zayn is not a main eventer at WrestleMania. Sorry, he's just not. Neither is Kevin Owens, by the way. So that leads to Cody and Seth. Now, if Randy Orton was in the mix, that probably would have been an option. But he's not in the mix. So that's not going to happen. Given the two, Cody and Seth, who do you think Triple H is going to go with? The guy who embarrassed him and humiliated him and mocked him when he left the WWE? Or the guy who's one of his best friends? I think that's a no-brainer. However, if Vince McMahon has anything to say about it, it'll definitely be Cody, because that's the guy that Vince McMahon was high on and promoting the hell out of before he stepped down. So that's where I think this lies, Mike. It really depends who really is in control of creative. Is it Triple H 100% with no weight given to what Vince McMahon wants, or is that a myth and Vince McMahon is going to put some pressure on Triple H to do what he wants?
Yeah, and think about this. How many of the Vince McMahon guys have been rehired? I mean, I believe, what's his name, that we're on the Vince McMahon team. That have, yeah, we've seen a bunch of the, including Steven Regal, be rehired by the WWE, but a bunch of ex-WWE that were Triple H guys on creative, but a number of X-Men guys have been rehired by the WWE and put back into creative. So that's another issue to look at. There's going to be fights on this in creative room between the Vince McMahon guys and the Triple H guys. I mean, it's not just Vince McMahon versus Triple H. It's Vince McMahon and his staff versus Triple H and his staff, you know?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. And it's also going to depend a little bit on how is Cody received. Now, Cody should get a hero's welcome back. After what he went through, toughed it out in Hell in a Cell with his pectoral ripped right out off the bone, he deserves it. Absolutely deserves it. But I know WWE fans, and I know that if he picks a fight with Seth Rollins, he's not going to get the crowd behind him. Seth Rollins is too hot right now. So if he comes back with the I got unfinished business with Seth Rollins, I got news. It's not going to end well for Cody. Maybe 30-35% of the audience tops is going to be in his corner, and I don't even know if it's going to be that much. And how do you get a guy from that position into the main event of WrestleMania in one of the biggest matches of the year, if not the biggest match of the year, that only has 30-35% of the audience behind him? You don't. You just don't. How much of the audience does Seth Rollins have behind him? He comes out, the roof blows off the building. They're singing his song. They're singing his song in the middle of the match. He's got him eaten out of the palm of his hand. I mean, and there's a built-in story between the two of them, so I'm sorry to tell you. And you also got to consider one more thing, folks. Triple H is not going to say, I don't like Cody Rhodes because he made fun of me, and I don't want to put him in the main event. That's not what Triple H is going to do. Triple H is going to say, do we really want a guy who was a mid-carder in the WWE but a champion over an AEW to come in from AEW and beat our champion that we promoted as being so tough he held the belt for years? What signal does that send? That AEW is better than us? That one of their guys can just walk on over and dethrone Roman Reigns? Is that what we really want? That's how he's going to pitch that. It's hard to argue with. That's hard to argue with. So unless you got Roman Reigns winning at WrestleMania, which I don't think I do, but if you got Roman Reigns winning, then I guess it doesn't matter. But is Triple H, if he's 100% in charge, is Triple H putting the belt on Cody Rhodes? Man, I don't know. I know he'd put the belt on Seth Rollins in a heartbeat. He already did. So that's why I say Vince McMahon could change things. Even if The Rock is out of the mix. Because at the end of the day, no matter what anybody says, Triple H can say what he wants. He can say, I'm the head of creative and I do whatever I want to do. Vince McMahon has told me I do whatever I want to do. Let's just take it down to the level of anyone who works in any form of business. You could be the manager. Let's say you're the manager of the sporting goods department at your store. And you say, I want the shelves done this way and I want these things on the end cap. And the owner of the store to you, yeah, but that's not what I want. Are you going to say, too bad, I'm the manager, I do things my way? Or are you going to say, oh, okay, well, I guess then if you insist on doing it that way, I guess that's what we'll do. Which one are you going to do? I mean, I think it's a no-brainer, right? You're going to acquiesce to what the owner wants. Now, the owner could be one of those guys who says, I'm not going to interfere. I think it's a mistake, but I hired this guy to be my manager, and whatever he wants, you do it. And if it turns out to be terrible, then I'm firing him. Vince McMahon's not firing Triple H. So is Vince McMahon totally going to stay out? Vince McMahon might stay out of Monday Night Raw. Vince McMahon might stay out of SmackDown. He might stay out of a lot of the events. If you're telling me that you think that Vince McMahon is going to stay totally out of WrestleMania, thing that he created that will be his legacy as long as he lives and long after, I'm not sure I believe that one. Ask yourself if you would. If you created something that revolutionized the entire business of professional wrestling, something that launched professional wrestling into an era where it is now literally so widely accepted that Sports Illustrated covers it. And you found your way back to power in your company. Are you going to stay completely out of it and say, it doesn't matter to me, it's only a silly wrestling event? Or are you going to say, this is my baby, this is what I created, this is my legacy? Vince McMahon is WrestleMania. I don't know, Mike. I don't see Vince McMahon staying completely out of WrestleMania.
I don't even see him stay out of the next pay-per-view, because think about this. You can very easily see the Royal Rumble end with Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes being the last two guys in.
Yeah, that's how I'd book it, because then the fans wouldn't know. Exactly how I'd book it, and I'll tell you why I think that's a really good idea. You could always – the referee wears an earpiece, a little earphone. That way they can be talked to. If they have to end the match early or they got to do whatever, the referee can hear from backstage, tell them to wrap it up. It would be very easy to say, okay, we don't even know who's playing. Seth and Cody are going to be the last two people in there. When we make a decision based upon the crowd noise, you let the wrestlers know. Cody, you're getting thrown out. Seth, you're getting thrown out. Depends on how the crowd reacts. If the crowd's all on Cody's side, Cody's winning. If the crowd's all on Seth's side, Seth's winning. We're going to let the crowd decide this one because that's the one who's going to be going to WrestleMania and we need that big pop. They might do that. They've changed the outcome of matches mid-match many times. And that's how they do it. They communicate with the referee, and the referee tells the workers. So it is possible. In fact, I would, if someone gave me that idea, I'd say, that's not a bad idea, really. Because at least then the crowd goes home happy, and then whoever wins, that's the guy they're going to back at WrestleMania, for sure. So, yeah, it's very possible. If they do, I almost guarantee you, Todd, that it's going to be Seth Rollins, because I don't see that crowd turning on Seth Rollins.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about the whole thing with the Seth Rollins being popular. And, he, as of right now, he is hot with the crowd, with being popular, singing a song during the matches, before, during, and after the matches of Seth Rollins. You know, I think you're going to see a big push from him as a face.
Yeah, and if you remember, Seth Rollins, last year's WrestleMania, remember they did the gimmick where he didn't really even have a match, and he was begging Vince McMahon for a match and stuff. Seth Rollins hasn't been the main event of WrestleMania in a while. And once again, that old bugaboo of Cody Rhodes left to join AEW, and do you really want an AEW guy to be your main event of WrestleMania, challenging your champion, possibly winning? I don't know. Did they do that with Sting? When Sting came over and fought Triple H, you know, a lot of people said, Triple H isn't petty, huh? Sting had his one big WrestleMania moment. Did he win? Would it have hurt Triple H to lose to Sting? No. How many moments has Triple H had in WrestleMania? Many, 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 many. How many did Sting have? One, and it's a loss. Because Triple H didn't want to lose to Sting. And you know how he justified that? Well, Sting isn't a WWE guy. And you shouldn't let a non-WWE guy go over against somebody like me who's been WWE lock, stock, and barrel for how long? Well, I know people are going to say, well, Cody was WWE first. Yeah, but he didn't get his great success there. Cody was a mid-carder in the WWE. His greatest success came in AEW. And I know Triple H is going to make that pitch. because sometimes Triple H is petty when it comes to stuff like that. Do you think if I was in Triple H's shoes and Sting, as much as icon and he's been in professional wrestling, was going to get his one probably final shot at WrestleMania, and this was his very first WrestleMania, the very first time Sting is in a ring at WrestleMania, that I would say I'm not losing to him? I'd be like, well, of course he has to win. This is his big WrestleMania moment. Might be the only one he ever gets. Of course I'll lay down for him. Of course I'll do the job for him. He's a legend. No big deal. Did Triple H do it? No, he didn't. He didn't. So now you're going to tell me that Sting, what did Sting ever do to him? Anything that you know? No, Sting never did anything to him. So what do you think he's going to do with a guy who mocked him at a pay-per-view and smashed a throne with a sledgehammer and made fun of his entrance and said a whole bunch of bad things about the WWE in general? What do you think he's going to do with that? That's what you got to consider. So maybe for Cody, the best thing in the world that happened is Vince McMahon came back, because I'm not 100% sure he'd be treated the same by Triple H. Just like Theory wasn't really treated the same by Triple H. Theory was well on his way to being possibly heavyweight champion. And they really sidetracked. Yes, he's a minor champion, but have they derailed his huge, huge push that he was getting from Vince? Of course they did, because he's not Triple H's guy. Triple H is like, yeah, slow the train down. He's got plenty of time. He's young. There's plenty of time to do stuff with him. Vince had him on a fast track to being a main eventer at WrestleMania, or one of them. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a difference. Now, again, I don't know if Vince McMahon is really going to be able to stay out of WrestleMania. Maybe he will. Maybe he really and truly feels, look, I'm just too old for this, and I don't care anymore, and I'm gladly handing over all this responsibility. But Mick Foley certainly knows Vince McMahon a lot better than any of us would. And Mick Foley said, yeah, that's not happening. This is Vince McMahon's only hobby, the only thing he embraces. You know, we all have our hobbies. We play music, we read, we watch sports, we participate in sports, we do this, we do that. He said, Vince has none of that. This is his world. You tell me staying out of it? I don't know. Now, I did have a guy write to me and say, this, the whole thing is a swerve, because if you think it's an accident that they planned this in Hollywood where The Rock's just happening to be and he's just not showing up, come on. Yeah, I know. I know. I think that was the plan from the very beginning, and it was definitely going to be The Rock, but then I think a few things happened. One thing that happened is the fans started really liking the Bloodline. And I think maybe the WWE took a step back and said, uh-oh, if they're popular, what happens if The Rock comes in and gets booed? What happens if The Rock comes in and fans don't take to him anymore? They like the Bloodline. Going to be all upset, because, yes, The Rock is upset. When, remember when Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble and The Rock had to go in there and raise his hand and the crowd booed? I heard The Rock threw a fit backstage. And literally said, you know, the way you booked me, I get booed out of the building. That does not make me look good for Hollywood and blah, 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 blah. And he was not a happy camper. He does not want to be booed. Well, he could get booed again. So maybe they said, you know, this maybe isn't the best time. Maybe we'll do something else. So initially they might have booked it in Hollywood because they thought, yes, The Rock will be there. Yes, we are planning on this. And they probably were. But as time went on, maybe this plan kind of fell apart. And they said, okay, well, it's not going to work out as well as we thought. So just because it's in Hollywood, Mike, doesn't mean it's definitely going to be a swerve and The Rock's going to be there, because they could have planned that, thinking that, and then halfway through, once they've already made the commitments to Hollywood, you know, he said, no, I can't do it.
Right. And we'll see. I mean, just because just because it's there doesn't mean he isn't going to be there. Just because he's there doesn't mean he is going to be there. I mean, he could find a way to be at Raw. You know, he could find a way. It's there, you know. He could absolutely. So we really don't know what this thing is. And here's something else to think about the Royal Rumble. You know, you're talking about Seth Rollins winning the Royal Rumble, but there's another possible outcome, and we've seen this be done before with the Royal Rumble, where two people go with a rope, the last two people go with a rope, so it's so close that you can't really tell who touched first.
Right. Yep.
So, and then what if that happens? What if both Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes go over the rope and it's so close that you can't tell, even with instant replay, you can't tell who touched first?
Well, right? I'll tell you what might happen, Mike, because you might be onto something. I'll tell you exactly what might happen. Two things might happen. I'll tell you the one I think will happen, because I think you might have nailed it. What would happen is, oh, it's a three-way dance for the belt. But I don't think they'd do that. Perhaps they would say, well, since we can't determine who the champion is, the Royal Rumble says you get a shot at the champion at WrestleMania. Doesn't say who the champion is. So night one, Seth, you take on Roman Reigns. If Roman wins, the next night, Roman has to take on Cody. Seth, if you win night one, then Cody takes on you on night two. So either way, the guy in night two takes on the champion, whoever the champion may be. You could easily do that, Mike, and you know what? That could potentially be exactly what they do.
That could potentially. But also, you could have Roman Reigns say, well, since we can't tell, it's not going to be the three-way dance, but I'm going to do the Universal Championship with one guy and the WWE Championship with the other guy, because we know they want to split those two championships up.
And they could do that too, exactly. There's a couple of options. There's a couple of branches on that tree. Logically, you would think they would do the champion has to fight the contender, whoever the champion is. But they could make some kind of an agreement that, well, Roman Reigns is going to have to defend his belt twice. He'll defend one championship on night one. He'll defend the second championship on night two. Very possible. Very possible. There's a couple of branches on that tree, and that could very well be the way they're going. Now, the danger in that is it is very hard, and I mean very hard, for both guys to fall out of the ring and land exactly at the same time. Now, later on, when you edit the tape, you can make it look that way. You can make it look whatever way you want. But if it's blatantly obvious live, then it's laughable. So you got to be pretty damn close. You got to really be, your fans ain't going to buy it. You have to be real close. And if it's like, well, you can sort of tell, they can fix that. But you can't fix like a full second or a second and a half. You just can't fix that. Fans will know better. So if they do that, I hope that they're, I hope it works out. That's all I got to say. That can be tricky. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about SmackDown, because there were some interesting things that happened here. The most interesting thing, I think, is that we now see the Brawling Brutes are basically without Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. They're on their own, Ridge Holland and Pete Dunne. And exactly what I said might happen to them seems to be happening, and that is, yeah, they're not going to be successful. They're going to be the give you a good fight and lose team all the time. Sheamus and McIntyre didn't come out with them. And while they did mention, wouldn't it be interesting if the Brawling Brutes had to fight the Sheamus and McIntyre in the next round, they never really indicated that Sheamus and McIntyre were members of the Brawling Brutes, just friends of theirs. So I found that kind of interesting, Todd. It seems like they're going to try to separate those two, and I don't think that's going to work out too good for the Brutes.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, what about the Holland and formerly known as Pete Dunne, now as Butch. A very young tag team. I like to see them to get pushed for the tag team champions down the line. And like you said, by the looks of it, looks like they're going to be thrown under the bus. Another great tag team.
I hope not, you know. But, Mike, we worried about this. I said if you take Sheamus out of that mix, these guys, they're not going to be treated the same, and it looks like we were right.
Yeah, and really, this is a mistake. This is a mistake. I know they want to do something with Imperium. I get that, all right? But all four of those guys in that match are Triple H guys. So I know they want to do something with Imperium, but the story would have been what we said it would have been. It would have been if they would have kept the group together, that both sides of the group make it to the finals. Then what?
Yep.
You know?
That would have been better for sure. So anyway, Sheamus and McIntyre, I guess they're calling them what, the Banger Brothers, take on the Viking Raiders. Poor Viking Raiders. They get the biggest push they've ever gotten, and they're eliminated in the first round. Now, they did get in plenty of offense, and I still say, I think I'm partial. So I'm gonna admit right now that I'm probably biased, because for whatever reason, I've always liked Sarah Logan, and I just seeing her on the outside of the ring like that, she looks perfect for the role, and I'm just like, God, they got so much they could do with them, but it's just not going to happen. Now, Sheamus and McIntyre, you kind of knew they were going to win. Those are big names. They're not going to beat Sheamus and McIntyre. And that's why I wish they had fought somebody else and advanced at least to round two. That way you could have said, well, the Raiders got at least to round two. But they're putting them in the same boat as they're putting, you know, Los Lotharios. And as much as we love Angel Garza, they're not doing anything with them. So you're going to put the Viking Raiders in that same boat? That's a shame. Because those guys are really talented, and they put on a very good match. Because those guys also like to work a little bit stiff, and there was a lot of stiff shots in that match. And for my money, take it for what it's worth. I don't want to sound like a misogynist, but I'm just going to tell you that I think Sarah Logan is beautiful. I'm looking at her on the outside of the ring, and I'm like, God almighty, you can't market her. The camera loves Sarah Logan, believe me. And she's really, I think a really honest part of her is into this role. You can just tell. And yet she has to lose. And her team has to look like, oh, well, you know, we're not as good as we said we were. We're not exactly these, you know, thundering Vikings coming in to pillage and destroy. We got our asses kicked. Okay. I hope they rebound them a little bit. I hope they give them a feud they can win, because they're going to need that now to be rehabbed. They're definitely going to need that. But I love Sheamus and McIntyre. I mean, you know, wouldn't break my heart if they won the whole thing, because I think they're, you know, both of those guys are great. Good match overall, Mike. I worry. I don't want to see the Viking Raiders get thrown under the bus.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Think about this with Sarah Logan, though. Her body looks like Becky Lynch is used to. Think about
yeah.
that now. I mean, she's very approachable, number one, but she has, I mean, the last kicker was Becky Lynch's name, and you looked at her original body, and yeah, you can see her sitting at a bar, and some woman or whatever comes up to her and tries to start something with her, and, well, you're not going to beat Becky Lynch looking like that. Just like you're not going to beat Sarah Logan looking like she looks. You know, yes, she had to lose some of her baby weight, whatever it was, but you know, they got to get her in the ring. You know.
Yeah.
In this new role, they got to get her in the ring and do something with her. And I hope the start of that is going to be the Women's Royal Rumble. She doesn't have to win it. She just has to do well in it.
Yeah, at least do well in it. I just hope the Viking Raiders aren't lost in the shuffle here, because for guys their size, they are very, very good at what they do. And they're a hard-hitting tag team. And they look like they'll do you some damage. So these are the type of people I like to see in the tag team divisions. Because we're going to see the polar opposite to Hit Row. I mean, Hit Row came out, and yes, Top Dollar just looks like he's a big dude. But, man, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to pick on the guy. I'm really not, because I get it. He's a big guy, and he looks like, you know, if he got a hold of you, he could do some damage. But he moves like a guy who joined wrestling school yesterday. I mean, I'm sorry, but he does. Now, his partner's fine. He's great. Did you see the match Los Lotharios put on as long as he was in the ring? Wow. There were some parts of that match that I'm like, how in the world does the fans not see that Los Lotharios are really, really good workers? Really good workers. The matches they could put on with the Street Profits and people like that, man, oh, man, you're missing the boat on them guys. I'm telling you, you're missing the boat on them. Instead, you got Top Dollar stumbling around the ring like he joined wrestling school an hour ago. And I don't know. Now, on the bright side of that match, they let Los Lotharios look pretty strong, number one. And number two, they didn't lose fairly. So there was interference from the outside. So at least they protected them in the loss. When you see them being protected in a loss, at least it means that they clearly know they don't want them to look that bad. Because it would have been very easy to just say, oh, no, you're just flat out losing. We don't have any real plans for you, so you just lose. They didn't do that. They booked it to protect them, to look like, well, they could have won. But it was outside interference. So if there's any good that came out of it, Mike, it's that.
Yeah, it is that. And frankly, I don't know what's happening, but if you noticed during that match, who was sitting at ringside doing commentary?
Yep.
Didn't Zelina Vega show up?
Well, no, she showed up for her own guy. She showed up for the Legado de Fantasmo. But they're going to, you know, listen, that's why I thought, Mike, maybe Lotharios will go over. Because you got no plans for Hit Row. You know you got no plans for Hit Row. So why not do that? Where you say, this used to be Zelina Vega's, you know, former charges, and it's going to be them against... you tell me you wouldn't rather see them against El Legado de Fantasma? Of course you would. That would have been awesome. Just like Sheamus and McIntyre against the Brawling Brutes. You had so many branches on the tree, and you took every wrong branch. So now you just look at next week, and you're like, well, I know who's winning. I already know who's winning. Now, I'll say this, too. Imperium is an underrated tag team. Those guys are very good. They're very good. And it didn't break my heart that they won. It's just that, again, I think Mike's idea is a better idea. They had to win by disqualification. Even if maybe Gunther interfered or something happened, it would have been cool to have to see that match. It would have been cool to hear the promos for that match. It just would have been a cool match altogether. So it's unfortunate. They're not getting by Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. I'll tell you that right now. But it was cool to see. But then again, what does that do? Does that make the Brawling Brutes look how? Oh, well, the Brawling Brutes couldn't beat Imperium, but McIntyre and Sheamus sure could. I guess we know who the you know, real tough guys are out of that group, huh? See, that's what I don't like about it. I just wish they took Mike's idea, because it's a much better idea, and I would have been, yes, of course, Sheamus and Drew McIntyre would have won that match too. To see it would have been fun. Just to see it would have been fun. And afterwards, if they all shook hands and it was whatever, it would have been like, that's cool. Those guys are still cool. They'll punch each other in the face and then go have a beer. That's pretty awesome. No, they didn't do that. They didn't have Zelina Vega battle it out with her former tag team either. There's so many missed opportunities. Now, as far as El Legado de Fantasma is concerned, those guys are a great tag team. However, only their leader is charismatic. The other two guys are just like two generic wrestlers. I'm sorry, they are. No real personalities. They haven't fleshed out any characters for them. At least they're fleshing out the characters of Imperium, where we know how each guy is. They didn't do that at all with them. So, you know, I don't see them going anywhere with this. All in all, I mean, you know, it's pretty predictable. And I don't even think it's going to matter much, because if my prediction comes true, hey, there's nobody touching the Usos until we get to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Then that's probably who's going to dethrone them. Now, I heard that they're going to do something where they're going to have the Usos, the titles be separated. One on Raw and one on SmackDown. I don't know if that's true. And if it is true, I don't know if it's going to be until after WrestleMania. I don't know. Again, this now boils down to, how much can the Usos work? You want them on Raw, you want them on SmackDown, you want them on both, and now, you know, obviously Fox is saying we want champions, and Raw, we want champions too, and I don't know. That was the problem with combining it all, is you're making them bounce back and forth between shows. You know. Now, the star of the SmackDown, however, once again is Sami Zayn. I mean, Sami Zayn had to cut some serious acting chops here, because he had to go from a guy who's just trying to get along with Roman Reigns, so he's saying, no, everything's fine, everything's wonderful, I don't have a problem, to Roman Reigns kind of seeing through it, saying, obviously there's a problem, tell me the truth, to Sami Zayn finally saying, I guess I'll tell you the truth, I don't know why the hell the Usos interfered. You're the one who told me to go out there and do it by myself, and then when I have things ready to go, boom. Here they come. Why? And Roman snaps and says, why don't you go find your own bloodline, man? This is ridiculous. I'm tired of fighting like babies every week. And just leave. And now Zayn has to look totally defeated and whatever. And then Paul Heyman steps in and says, look, man, if I may say, you are on the precipice of fighting Kevin Owens for the championship, and Sami Zayn's the only friend he had or has, and wouldn't it be better if you had him in the castle pissing out rather than outside the castle pissing in? All that makes perfect sense. That's good writing, because people say, yeah, that's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. And then Roman Reigns calls him back in and says, look, yeah, it's my fault again. I just get upset with this kind of stuff, but I should be proud of you that you wanted to do this on your own and prove things, and you're right, and the way you feel is correct. And, you know, I don't want to have us on opposite sides of the spectrum here, so, yeah, you're correct. Knowing he's being disingenuous, knowing he's only doing this because he wants Sami on his side during this Royal Rumble match, this is really good work, Todd. This is good, good writing and good performance of that writing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is good writing. I sue Cecil for with the bloodline and everything on SmackDown. And like you said about the championships, when I noticed last week on Raw, they were doing like a number one contenders thingy for the Raw tag titles, and a couple of days later, they were doing a tag team title tournament for the other tag belts. And we've been saying this for a while. They put the belts up. They need their own champions on their own, each show.
And they very well might. But, Mike, this is the key. The bloodline, you can say all you want that the bloodline is great wrestlers and very good actors, and they are. But you need good writing to make sure that, you know, and the writers have to rely on you're doing my material well. Both things are happening. That's why the bloodline's so successful.
Right. I mean, there are certain people that can take and make something out of it. You know, The Miz can do it. Aaron Stevens had a habit of doing it, you know, when he was with The Miz and stuff like that. And there are people that do that. But when you've got both things going on, great writing and great performance art, that's what makes this stuff so good. And that's what makes this stuff so good. And that's what makes people's mind go things like, oh, when he gets back, what's going to happen with Naomi? You know, when how much longer is it going to be before Sami Zayn turns on the bloodline? Or how much longer is it going to be before the bloodline turns on Sami Zayn? See, things could go both ways, you know. It could go either or. That's how good this writing is.
Yeah, and the writers, now that the writers know, see, as someone who has written, I can tell you this. When I wrote something for someone and they didn't do it too well, the very first thing I would say is, okay, that's not going to work. We got to write something different that they can handle. And sometimes to the detriment, it was like, well, they can't handle that much. So I can only write so much. I got to make it real simple and, you know, not too dramatic and just, you know, real basic. And that can help hold you back. But if I wrote something for someone and I was like, whoa, did they ever knock that one out of the park? Then I was chomping at the bit because I'd say, well, now I can write X, Y, and Z. I know they can do that. I know they can do this. I know they can handle this. Let's see how much more they can handle. Let's push the boundary. And that's what ultimately leads you to be extraordinarily successful. Well, now the writers know that they can handle all of this. They can handle whatever you throw at them. All of them can. So it's carte blanche if you're a writer. There's no boundary line. You can write it as dramatic as you want, and they can handle it. They can handle the comedy. They can handle the drama. They can handle the tenseness. They can handle the whatever you want to write for them, they can handle. And that's the best thing a writer can hear, because then you have open season. You're not in a box anymore. So, yeah, the sky's the limit. My fear in any of this is that as soon as the Sami Zayn thing happens, the bloodline might take a hit downward, because that has kept this thing extremely alive. And I don't know if it's going to have the same energy with just the Usos and Solo as it does with Sami. We'll see. Aside from that, well, we got a pretty good promo out of Charlotte Flair, maybe one of her best ones. But I did want to say this about that tag team tournament before we switch to Charlotte. How many matches have we seen Hit Row do? We've seen them do, I don't know, 6, 7 matches. They've all been garbage. This one wasn't garbage, Mike. And what was the difference? The difference was Los Lotharios. They brought the very, very best out in Hit Row, and this was easily Hit Row's best match since they've been in WWE.
Absolutely. And think about this. I look at Los Lotharios and I say, okay, you can put them with the Tropics. You can put them with, the New Day. You could even put them with the Usos, and you're probably going to get probably a 4-star match, maybe even better than that. I mean, that's how good I think the Los Lotharios did. And this is probably, I would say, I know it's the best match that that Hit Row has had. It's probably near, damn near a 3.5-star match, you know, because it's the best they had. It's all due to the fact of who they were in there with.
No question. Those guys can go, and whoever produced that match did it very well. You know, I think that Los Lotharios may have helped themselves a little bit here, because if I'm, you know, a backstage guy and I'm watching this, I'm saying to myself, I don't know, man. We might be missing the boat on these guys. They work pretty damn well. Maybe we should give them a little boost up. See what happens. Let's see what happens if we push them just a little. See if the crowd's into them, if the crowd's not into them, you know. All I know is Detroit was hot. All night long, Detroit was pretty hot. Anyway, the Charlotte Flair thing with Sonya Deville. Sonya Deville, unfortunately, has become irrelevant. No one takes her seriously as a worker, and that's a shame because she actually is a pretty good worker. She's decent on the mic. She's not super good at facial expressions and acting. But she's decent on the mic. She's good in the ring, but because of her whole stint with Adam Pearce as co-general managers and dropping matches in 8 seconds to people, she's not taken seriously anymore. And this is going to help a little bit, hopefully. But Charlotte Flair showed a little personality. It wasn't, and I thought whoever wrote her speech was great, because they mentioned, the WWE is starting to mention things that fans are going to mention. Like, for instance, during the match with Hit Row, the announcers were saying, let's hope he doesn't try a dive again. I mean, we know he's not going to be able to do that. Normally, they try to bury that. Well, this time with Charlotte Flair got the chance to say, look, you come out here hardly wrestling. For a while, you were just the general manager. And then you lose. And then you have the hubris to come back out and say, well, I demand another title match, and you lose. Now you have a hubris to come out and say you want another one, and you're calling me entitled. You're telling me I get everything handed to me. You're the one in the ring that's asking for everything. You're the one in the ring that's acting like you're entitled. That was a very good line. I'll tell you why it was a good line. Number one, it acknowledges that Charlotte Flair is very well aware that fans think she gets things handed to her on a silver platter. And that was a very good way of saying, I really don't compare to some of these other people. Thought it was a good ending where Adam Pearce came out and said, we're not having this. And then Sonya Deville kind of blindsided Charlotte. They're trying real hard, I think, Todd, to get Charlotte over as a face. This is a good first step.
I think you're absolutely right there, like you said about Charlotte Flair. And, you know, when she came back, I was like, I'm thinking she's coming back as a face. He's definitely coming back as a face. And I was right about that. And well, like you said, I think this face run, I think it's a better face run than she had the last face run.
I think so, too, because they're humanizing her more. She's not just getting in the ring and going, woo, and I'm this and I'm that. She's kind of letting it fly now and saying, look, entitled or not, I'm not as entitled as some of you people is coming out here basically every week and when you don't even win matches saying I want a title shot and being granted them for no good reason. Just because you jump somebody backstage, you get a title shot. I thought she made a good point. I thought she connected with the crowd. I thought this was one of her better promos, Mike.
I thought so, too, and that's the thing. Now, we do know that eventually she will lose that title because they want her to be the 16-time champ. They want that.
Yeah.
And she's already at 14. So we know that's going to happen at some point. It's just not going to happen to, well, what's her name? Now, granted, if what we heard was true at the time and when all the stuff was going down with Sasha Banks and Naomi, that Naomi was going to be given one of those championships at some point. Now, probably at that point, it was going to be the Raw Championship. But could we be saying that within the next few months, Naomi come back and at some point be in league for that SmackDown Championship?
I guess it's possible, but I think it's more likely that if she does come back, it's going to be in response to Rhea Ripley. Because I don't think the WWE is going to go there with having Solo actually strike Rhea. Because as much as the fans, you see, because one of two things is going to happen then. My assumption is that the fans are going to pop for Solo. And then the idea behind it is, oh, great, a guy hits a woman and it gets a pop. We don't like that. Or the fans are going to react negatively and you don't want Rhea to be a face. So either way, it's sort of a lose-lose situation. So I don't think they'll let Solo put his hands on her. But somebody's obviously, if they're going to do this, someone's going to eventually be there. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's just a one-off and they're not even going to bother with the Judgment Day anymore. But if they do in any way, shape, or form, then that would obviously, Naomi would be the person you would think. Maybe Tamina Snuka, but most likely Naomi. Then we get a really good promo, another really good promo from LA Knight. I've always liked Eli Drake. I've always liked him. I even think he did an okay job as Max Dupree. It was just garbage, and there was no way to fix it. But this promo was good, and again, they let him say what's on the fans' mind. That's what I loved about this week's episode of SmackDown. The fans were like, well, I hope that top dollar guy doesn't try to do a beach whale flop again. And they let the announcers say it. Charlotte Flair said, listen, everybody thinks I'm entitled. I get things handed to me. They let her say that. And they let Eli Drake say, I don't know what the hell's going on with Bray Wyatt. I don't think anybody else does either. One minute he's not Uncle Howdy. The next minute he is Uncle Howdy. The next minute he's this. The next minute he's that. Because that's kind of what the fans are thinking. What the hell's going on with this? And I think that the storyline, whatever it happened to be in Bray Wyatt's imagination, whatever the storyline was going to be, I think they changed it. And I'll tell you why. I think they realized this isn't going over with the crowd. This every week, Uncle Howdy showing up and menacing and Bray Wyatt saying, I'm trying to stay being a good guy and all this. Fans were getting tired of it and they weren't sure where the hell it was going. And I think maybe there was more weeks of it to come. And I still think that they're probably doing Uncle Howdy versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. That was the original plan. And I still think it will be. But I think they told Bray Wyatt, no offense to this new stuff, but you better go back to what works. Because what did we get? We got the Funhouse. And the fans popped for it. Because that's what they wanted to see all along. They didn't mind waiting a week or two with Bray Wyatt and this weird stuff, but eventually they wanted to see the Funhouse back. And whoever writes the Funhouse stuff, whether it's Wyatt or Wyatt and a friend of his or whoever happens to be backstage, some of this stuff is brilliant. And to have, you know, Ramblin' Rabbit be a L.A. Knight fan saying, I think that guy's cool. It was funny as hell, but at the same time, you see, the interesting thing about the Funhouse is while it's funny sometimes, you know there's this underlying darkness to it where you're like, they're doing this on purpose. They're making it funny, but it's darkly funny because something bad's going to happen. And that's what makes it really cool. And Bray Wyatt does that character extremely well. Extremely well. And to see all of them back was fun. It was a lot of fun. And the very first thing I thought of when I saw the Funhouse is, how long before Alexa Bliss shows up at some point? Something's going to happen. We already know she's tied into this angle, which is a good thing. Something's definitely going to happen. I just thought it was great, though, Mike, that they let LA Knight say what's on the fans' mind, which is, can Bray Wyatt please decide who he is? One minute he's not Uncle Howdy, the next minute he is Uncle Howdy. One minute he's not this, the next minute he is. Because that's kind of what we were all thinking.
Right. And I like the fact that we've now seen two of his guys, you know, two of his personalities, right?
Right.
We've seen the,
yep.
the cult leader. Now we've seen the funhouse guy. What's left? You know,
the fiend.
And the fiend. And here's the deal. As Ramblin' Rabble was doing his fanboying of L.A. Knight, who was kind of coming up against him? It was Sister Abigail.
Right. Right.
You know, so obviously
they used that rabbit
right
purpose.
Now it's going to be Sister Abigail, but wouldn't it be? We know that Alexa Bliss is going to have something to do with this thing. At some point, she's going to be in here, and she's probably going to. And I mean, what was the big deal originally with Ramblin' Rabbit? He'd be doing this stuff, and all of a sudden, he'd be killed or something like that, right?
Yes.
He was like, he was like Kenny on.
Yes.
Yeah, he was the king. So at some point, I'm thinking they're going to do that again at some point.
Yeah, I thought they were going to pull it this week, to be honest. It's a very interesting segment because there's always so much in it that you can look back and say, well, this meant this or this meant that or they were doing this. It's very intelligently done. And it's almost like, I've said this before, but it's almost like watching like old Looney Tunes where when you were a kid, or like the Flintstones, when you were a kid, you didn't get certain things. When you got a little older and you were listening to stuff, then you're like, oh, I see what they were going for there. And then you get a little older even and you're like, oh, there's more stuff in here that I didn't quite get. Well, that's sort of what the Funhouse is. The first time, if you're a kid and you watch it, you get just so much out of it. If you're a little bit older, you can pick things out and say, I see where they're going with that. There's levels to it. It's not just a one-dimensional thing. That's what I like about it. And they throw in really weird stuff, like Bray Wyatt's trying to fix the plumbing or whatever, and he's got plumber's crack, but over the plumber's crack is that logo with the moth or whatever the hell it is. It's just little things like that that make it very interesting. And each one of the characters being so different, but yet you know they're all from the same person. I think what they're trying to emulate here is that Bray Wyatt's every one of those characters except maybe Sister Abigail. He's the Vulture. He's Ramblin' Rabbit. He's all of them. And in his mind, the personalities he's given them is while one of them is wanting to destroy Eli Drake, one of them's wanting to destroy L.A. Knight, one of them is secretly saying, he's pretty cool, man. I like the way he talks and the muscles. It's very interesting. It's a very, very interesting segment. I'm glad they brought it back. And you've got the right guy in L.A. Knight to do this with because for whatever reason, if you had the wrong person, that could look stupid. The whole thing could look silly. Like Randy Orton never connected with Bray Wyatt. It always made Randy Orton look a little silly. With L.A. Knight, it works because he has that look of, I know this is silly, and I know this is stupid, but it also feels like it could be dangerous. Pulls that off so well. He's an extraordinarily talented guy, Mike. I think they got something in him if they really want to do something with him.
Yeah, I think they got something with him as well. And if you listen to Sister Abigail's voice, Doesn't she sound kind of like Alexa Bliss?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, if you remember when in WrestleMania, when Alexa Bliss popped out of that thing, there was that black all over her, like Sister Abigail, and they could do some kind of a reasoning where they were saying it wasn't Alexa Bliss trying to destroy Bray Wyatt. It was Sister Abigail calling the Fiend back home. She was momentarily possessed by Sister Abigail, who wanted Bray Wyatt back. There's things you could do with that, because you're going to have to explain why she's on Bray Wyatt's team when she tried to destroy him before, or did technically destroy him before. You're going to have to make some reference to that. Because just to say, well, she was a part of his crew before, yeah, she's also the person that destroyed him. So let's not forget that. So hopefully they do something that ties that in. Otherwise, him wanting her back doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But still, a really good segment, Todd. I always look forward to seeing the Funhouse, and it was great to see it back.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they're doing this, doing a little bit of everything of Bray Wyatt, doing the cult, doing a little bit of the cult leader, doing a little bit of the Funhouse Bray Wyatt, and probably going to be doing a little bit of the Fiend, of the, like the three faces of Wyatt.
There's no question they'll be doing the Fiend. The interesting thing is they're probably going to keep Bray Wyatt out of the Rumble and LA Knight as well. I think that's actually smart. You know Bray Wyatt's not winning the Royal Rumble. Do you want him to get tossed out? No, you don't. And LA Knight, I think they're going to reserve judgment on here. I would not be surprised, again, do not be surprised if LA Knight wins this match. He won't win it clean. But do not be surprised if he beats Bray Wyatt, just plain Bray Wyatt, with maybe a little help from Uncle Howdy or some other characters that suddenly appear. Because I got a feeling they're not ready to throw LA Knight to the wolves just yet. And maybe, just maybe, this is the tipping point that brings Bray Wyatt over the edge and returns him to his old form, Mike, because I think just squashing LA Knight doesn't really seem to be in the cards.
Right, and that's the thing. And now, granted, look, depends on who they decide to put LA Knight against. Is it Bray Wyatt, the cult leader of Bray Wyatt? It's not going to be the Fiend yet. But it could be Bray Wyatt, the cult leader, or Bray Wyatt, you know, the Funhouse guy. Now, we know the Funhouse guy was nothing but a talker, right? So, yeah, he got in the ring a couple times, but I think he lost one or whatever it was. But he didn't have a big winning percentage. Now, the cult leader guy did have a big winning percentage. He lost some, but he had a better winning percentage. So it depends on who they put into the thing. Now, I do agree with you. It's not going to be a clean win for LA Knight. You're going to see Uncle Howdy. You're going to see you might very well see Alexa Bliss appear in that match at some point.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to tell what happens, but I think the swerve is everyone says, well, I mean, you know, Bray Wyatt's just come back. This is going to be his first feud. He's obviously going to win. I don't think so. I think this is going to be the final nail in the coffin of Bray Wyatt trying to stay sane and stay normal and revert back to his old self. And that way, LA Knight gets an important victory. He's going to give it up eventually to either, you know, the cult leader Bray Wyatt or the Fiend. One of the two will obviously destroy him at some point, but this will be a temporary push for LA Knight, where he says, yeah, I've won. He's a really good, I'll tell you, there's very few people who can work well with. I've heard people say, I don't want to work with Bray Wyatt. Not because he's not a good worker, not because he's not a nice guy, not because he's not safe, because it's really hard to play off of him. Because it's just too weird, and I don't know where I'm going with it. LA Knight is real good at it. He's doing a phenomenal job. So good for him. I mean, it just shows his versatility. He can work with pretty much anybody. Now, as far as the Imperium match goes, you know, you had I guess you could say that it wasn't overly predictable, but it kind of was. I mean, you had to figure they were going to win their match and move on to fight Sheamus and McIntyre. As far as the Legado del Fantasma, you know, who they Maximum Male Models, right? Those guys, I think they have potential, but I think they've given up on them. I think they pretty much said, you know what, you're just bums. You're going to be preliminary bums. I think you could have done a little more with them because they're both kind of good on the microphone and kind of good in this gimmick. And, you know, with a little bit of a, I don't know, it would take some writing and it would take some doing, but I think you could have pushed him to be something. I'm not really sold on Legado del Fantasma because I think these guys are so one-dimensional, except for, obviously, the head of it. He's very charismatic. He, sky's the limit for him. He could potentially be, you know, a champion soon. But the other guys, I can't tell you who's who. I don't even know who they are. They never fleshed out any of their characters. They don't really talk. They don't do anything. So they're like generic wrestlers, and I just, I don't know. I'm not sold on them, Mike, not yet anyway.
And that's sad because the one of them was DJ Z.
Yep, that's right.
You know,
still great wrestler.
We know how good he was in that role. We know how much charisma and stuff he was in that role, and it's sad to see that they, I mean, they can't call him DJ Z, but they could bring some of that to that role. You know, I mean, something. Give him something to work with. He's good enough that if you give him something to work with, he's going to work with it, right?
Yeah, he can do a character, but it seems like they don't want to give him one. It seems like they just want to keep these guys generic. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame. It's not that they're not great workers. They're very, very solid workers. They're not given a chance to have any personality. So at least the Maximum Male models have some personality. Maybe annoying, but at least it's a personality. And I'll tell you something. They do it good-naturedly. That's not an easy role. And it's almost like a gold dust roll in the sense that you say to yourself, my God, what did I get myself into? And you either embrace it and really go for it, or you half-ass do it because you really don't want to, and then you end up, you know, never being seen again. These guys are embracing it. They're embracing it as good as they can. And I think they're good in the roles. It's just, you know, we don't see them often enough, and they're not being put in enough skits, I think, to really make it worth anything. So, shame, but at least they got something to do, I guess. You know, they can't all be contenders, as they say. So, you know, it was good enough. With that in mind, I really enjoyed SmackDown this week. I didn't think I was going to, which makes it even better. You know, on paper, I said to myself, oh, God, here we go with the tag team tournament, which we pretty much know who's going to win. And, you know, the same old, and we're going to get more of the Bray Wyatt thing, which is going to be whatever it is, and Charlotte Flair's going to get on the mic and go woo, and it's just going to be eh. And, of course, we'll get the Bloodline, and that'll be interesting, but it won't be anything too spectacular. And I was wrong. The Bloodline thing was fantastic. The tag team tournament was not boring at all, even though you knew who was going to win. It still wasn't boring. It still was really good matches. And I thought they protected everybody pretty well. Even the Viking Raiders, technically, because if you think about it, no, Sheamus and McIntyre didn't cheat, but there was sort of a miscommunication there in the ring with the Viking Raiders, and all of a sudden, you know, broke kick out of nowhere after McIntyre hits a move. And they're a little disoriented. So it was almost like, well, a little bit of luck involved in that, too. So that was good, even though I do think the Viking Raiders should have advanced to round two over somebody else. Just don't put them against Sheamus and Drew in the first round. I thought it was entertaining. I thought start to finish it was quite good. And it makes me look forward to seeing what's going to happen Monday night with the Bloodline, and I'm sort of interested in what's going to happen with the finals. I think those matches could be good. So for that reason, this week, I'm going to give it an A-. I didn't see that much wrong with it, Mike, and I thought it was pretty enjoyable overall.
I got to give it an A- as well. And as far as the Maximum Male Models thing, it could be, if they handle it right, it could be every bit as good as the Fashion Police was. I mean, remember, before we even saw them in the ring, we saw a bunch of vignettes with Fandango and Tyler Breeze and stuff like that. And then they got in the ring and they won a few matches here and there, and eventually they ended up holding the titles, right? You know, so they could, it could, that Maximum Male Models could be every bit as good if they decide to work at it. I mean, not the guys, the Triple H and the writers and stuff. If they decide to work at it, it could be every bit as good as the Fashion Police was.
The first thing they got to do with them is they got to get the, Maxine or whatever it is, they got to get her involved. Why does she not have a big thing of perfume or something she can spray in people's eyes? Why does she not have some kind of a gimmick where she interferes a lot? That would be the perfect person for them to hide behind, because it's almost unrealistic that somebody wouldn't take a shot at Rhea Ripley, because she is a competitor and she's just about as big as a man and supposedly as tough as one. So if you're going to get in one of these wrestlers' faces, you'd think they'd at least push her the hell out of the way. So I won't lay my hands on her. Well, Maxine would be the perfect person you wouldn't, because you say, well, number one, she's obviously not, you know, even though she really is, she's obviously not meant to be a competitor. She's obviously not, you know, tough or anything. So why would you hit this woman? You wouldn't. That's the exact type of person you wouldn't put your hands on, even if you're the worst of the bad guys. So I don't know why she's not interfering constantly. That would be my gimmick for her, is that she is just constantly interfering. And nobody will do anything because she's a woman. You don't have to give them a lot of wins, but at least give them a win here and there so that it looks like they could potentially win at any given time. Right now, it's like, you already know. Anytime Maximum Male Models is out there, you're like, okay, well, yeah, that's a loss. That's a shame. Aside from that, though, I don't see anything wrong with this show, Todd. I thought it was, you know, pretty much start to finish, at least entertaining, and that's all you can really ask. What's your rating?
No, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty entertaining show. With the, I kind of liked the promos with Charlotte Flair. That was pretty cool. The other promos I liked as well. And like you said, I'm going to give it an A- as well.
Yeah, I think overall we can't really complain, especially at a show that I really honestly felt that was going to be subpar. I really didn't think I was going to like this show. So I'm happy. Aside from one or two little minor glitches that I thought was whatever, I liked it. I liked it. And we got to see Los Lotharios again, finally. You know, we're big Angel Garza fans here, so that was fun. You know, what can you say? Every time you think the WWE is going to put on a really, really good show, they drop the ball. Every time you think this is going to be one I'm going to have to grit my teeth to sit through, they put on a good show, Mike. It's weird. It's exactly the opposite of the way it should be.
What was the line from Seinfeld with George? What was it? If your instincts are always wrong, do the opposite. But that's the WWE. You know, I mean,
I get it.
I mean, really, it works out. It a lot of times works out. I mean, some of these pay-per-views recently we thought were going to be just stinkers, and they turned out to be near-perfect pay-per-views, you know?
Yep, they do it with the pay-per-views, too. Every time you think, wow, on paper, this pay-per-view looks like it's stacked, you end up saying, what a disappointment. And every time you look at the pay-per-view and say, you kidding me? That's what you're going with? That doesn't sound promising. You end up with a really good one, and you're like, whoa, okay, where did that come from? It's bizarre how the WWE does things. It's really bizarre. I'd like to sit in. One of my ultimate dreams is to sit in on a writer's conference or creative, just to see what's on their mind, because sometimes you say, I don't know how you missed the obvious. And then sometimes you say, I don't know how you pulled that out of this crap. So it's pretty interesting overall. We did have one person write us a question about the bloodline, saying, do you think that half of the bloodline is going to divide and turn face, the other half stay heel? No, I don't. I think whatever they're going to do, I think if they're heel, they're going to all be heel. If they're face, they're going to all be face. I don't think they're going to divide them against each other. Been there, done that at the beginning when Jey Uso was battling Roman and then Jimmy battled Roman, and I'm not going to do that again. I don't see why. I mean, Solo would have the only chance of maybe being the heel and turning on Roman and going for, like, I want to be the tribal chief. I could see that maybe down the road. But I don't think for the foreseeable future we'll see any kind of a split between the bloodline. I don't think that would work out too well, Mike.
I don't think so either. And furthermore, I'm going to keep going back to this. And Naomi, you know. I mean, and also at some point, the daughter, but that's way down with the Rock's daughter. But Naomi, yeah, I could very well see her at some point being in the bloodline. And hell, I mean, that her bubbly, dancy type glow girl, I think it's kind of worn a little bit thin. She needs a makeover. You know, she's a fine athlete, but she needs a makeover. And, you know, maybe this is the time for that makeover, you know.
Well, you know, Mike, I'm pretty sure you watched it. I lost track of the number, but one of the Marine movies with The Miz, she played like a biker chick in a gang, along with like Bo Dallas and Kurt Henning and a few Curtis. And she was really good. And she wasn't bubbly, and she wasn't funny, and she wasn't dancy, and she wasn't smiling. She was pretty serious and stark, and she did a really good job. And I said way back then, gee, it might be interesting to see her as a heel. Might be interesting to see her do a little bit darker. Now, I don't know if she's going to be a heel, because I think if she joins them, she's going to maybe join them to try to counteract Rhea Ripley, and that doesn't make her a heel, but I guess my point is, if they don't want her to be that glow type thing, dancer, I don't think she has to be, Mike. We've seen her be serious, and she was fine.
Yeah, we've seen her be serious. And look, when she left, I understand, I haven't seen it, but I understand she did change her hair after she left,
yeah.
After she left, you know. So
yep.
Now will she change? When she comes back, and we know she's coming back, you know, we have a pretty good idea that she is coming back. Will that change stick? Because if she changed her hair and it sticks, and they allow it to stick, and she shows up, and we say, well, we know it's Naomi, but it doesn't look like her because she doesn't have the green tips and all this stuff on her, you know, then we're going to say, okay, they're going to try and play her serious, more serious, and we'll see her basically get in touch with, you know.
Well, if they were ever going to do it, Mike, this would be the week, because if Usos take on Judgment Day, it would make perfect sense that if Jimmy Uso was being manhandled by Rhea Ripley on the outside of the ring, that some, you know, at some point, Naomi would maybe jump over the barricade as a surprise and, you know, beat the hell out of Naomi. I think that would get a huge pop. The only problem is the huge pop, because I don't know if they want the bloodline going into WrestleMania. It's so confusing how they've handled the bloodline, because half the time they look like faces and then half the time they look like heels. And I don't know if you want to push either one of them, but, I mean, that would be an opportune time.
Well, yeah, and the thing is if she's looking totally different, I mean, yeah, you could probably tell facial structure and body type and all that stuff, but hair is a big deal with women. You know, I mean, I've said it before, Bailey with her hair up and Bailey with her hair down, totally different people, right?
Yeah.
So if she's done her hair in a totally different way that makes you question whether or not it's her, then that's all the better. It's some, we know it's her, but they can say, well, it's some fan or some person that's jumped out.
Well, you don't even have to show her. I mean, you literally don't even have to show her. You literally can just have Jimmy Uso on the outside and Rhea Ripley pick him up, slam him or whatever. And next thing you know, over the barricade comes and, fans over the barricade. Wait, that's not a fan, that's Naomi. You know, that works. The only reason that might not work is because then they're going to get a big pop. And I don't know if you want them to get a big pop. Do you want the Usos to go into WrestleMania with a big pop when they're the bad guys going against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn probably? Probably not. So it's a dilemma. It's a dilemma because you don't want the bad guys being rooted for. And you don't want the bad guys getting a big face pop. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think at some point, though, we're going to see something very similar to that. I mean, they're already doing this because if you think that anybody's rooting for the Judgment Day, they're not. So they're already kind of on thin ice with that. Anyway, folks, we will be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a